Martin Kilcoyne back with you on the Kilcoyne Conversation. Make sure you subscribe, iTunes, Spotify. That way every episode is delivered directly to you, whether it's Kelly Chase or Daryl Strawberry, John Mozeliak, Mike Shannon. Who knows who we're going to talk to next? But I do know who we're talking to this week. That would be Dan Buck, who was prominent in St. Louis television and radio, and then in the philanthropy world. And I've always wondered, because I like people with unique resumes, how he ended up here, and then he ended up there. And during the pandemic this past year, sort of became the face and the voice for kids and sports, and the fact that in the county they weren't letting the kids play sports. Dan certainly has a vested interest. He's got a project called Powerplex, where they turn the old St. Louis Mills, the abandoned mall, and turn it into a massive youth sports facility. And they're working with the St. Louis County Council to move that project forward. But I thought we'd kind of pick Dan's brain just about where that sits, how he did become a bit of a lightning rod, but also the career itself. I've always wondered, you know, how did it all start for Dan? And we get those answers in this week's visit of the Kilcoyne Conversation, which is presented by Triad Bank, Marie Davila Senior Living, as well as Appliance Discounters. Well, often on the Kilcoyne Conversation, we talk to people with interesting resumes. I'm sort of obsessed with people who have a second act or trying different things. And Daryl Strawberry was a great example recently. Even Matt Holliday, who told us he wanted to come back to the Cardinals. That didn't happen, but he was willing to have a second act. And our guest this week is Dan Buck. My first question, Dan, would be, how do I introduce you? I was going to say recovering media member, entrepreneur, charitable foundation guy for a while. How would you, if you had to introduce yourself, how would you?
You know, I think it's kind of a tale of two careers. You know, one obviously in broadcasting for 21 years as radio and TV and loved it. I mean, nothing really, people always say, why'd you leave? Why, you know, in your prime of your career, why'd you leave at age 40 years old after, you know, spending 21 years doing it? And for me, it was just, you know, I felt I had more to give, not only to my community, but I also had more to give professionally. We kind of get into a routine in broadcasting where you just show up and sometimes it's the same old thing and you're doing the same old thing. So, and 9/11 had a profound impact on me. I mean, that three-week spell of covering that event and, you know, going wall to wall. I also was at a time when my kids were starting to get of age, and because I was working 70 hours a week between radio, TV, and my own broadcasting production company, I really started to recognize I was missing too many games, I was missing too much stuff. So there was kind of a culmination of life events and career events that kind of came to a head in 2001, and I just decided that I was going to take a step back from broadcasting, evaluate that, figure out what my skill set and tools could be. And I was on my radio show one morning. It was the only part of my broadcasting career I was still doing. And I went on a rant. I think it was about the housing and urban development, of how we just keep throwing money at problems instead of throwing solutions at problems. And I mentioned St. Patrick's Center, that I felt it was a good model. I talked about McMurphy's Grill, of how they transform people from homelessness and get them out of homelessness, actually had a plan to move people forward, not just manage their homelessness. Well, the president of the board heard that, and he called me up and asked me to go to lunch. The next thing I know, I'm applying for a job I didn't even think I wanted. You know, I'm like, well, I'll go through the motions. But as I learned more about really the depth of St. Patrick's Center, I thought, this is a perfect time, perfect place. I quit my radio job and just put my whole heart and soul into that place that truly changes lives each and every day, what they do down there, and the live hearts and the live minds of people who work in that field and in that industry, patience of a saint and heart of gold. It just was a fun, you know, 8 years that I spent there of just you know, my role was kind of one of those fuzzy things, like, why am I here? What do I have? Well, I found out they needed a storyteller. They needed somebody. I didn't need to rebuild programs. I didn't need to dive in and tell people how to do their social work jobs. I needed to put a big, bright light on this incredible ship that was moving in the right direction every day and changing lives. And they needed somebody in Washington. They needed somebody to get out there and tell our story better. Well, I'd been telling stories for 21 years. So God kind of prepared me for that journey and did that for 8 years. And then the Archbishop and I had a great conversation about Cardinal Glennon and all the opportunities we could do over at SSM Cardinal Glennon, and spent about 5.5 years there. And then, you know, while I was there, one of the things that I recognized was childhood obesity is a major problem in America. It's the number one killer of kids, not COVID, not anything else.
Not video games.
No, not video games. Well, and video games is part of it. Yeah. I mean, childhood obesity is a real issue. Over 40% of all childhood disease is preventable if we could get weight under control. And so I had created kind of a plan, had a lot of board members in support of the Cardinal Glennon Hospital team to go into the youth sports and really try to introduce fitness, wellness activities, do more nutrition program training for parents, and really create a space and a place. And found out it didn't make it up the hierarchy very, very well at SSM. They were in the business of taking care of sick people and not trying to keep them from getting sick, and made that pretty clear to me that they didn't want to go down this preventative path. So I decided if I'm really passionate about this, I need to step away and look for ways to do it. So called on some friends, and we started some sports development ideas and how to build a dynamic sports venue, and how we could not only serve low income and obese and other kids, but also to create a business model that could make sense and really put St. Louis on the map in this youth sports industry. It's booming all across the U.S. We're getting beat every weekend by towns like Peoria, Illinois, and Jacksonville, Illinois, and Rosemont, Illinois, and Westfield, Indiana, and all these other places. I just said, hey, let's put St. Louis in the game. Let's try to create a dynamic, incredible sports venue. And that's the third part of the career. So from broadcasting to social service and philanthropy work, and then ending here doing something I love too. I mean, youth sports is something I've been coaching for 23 years, and all three of my kids were very blessed to be healthy and play at the college level. And it was just, a passion of mine. So all of my worlds could kind of collide to end my career.
Powerplex is where we're sitting doing this interview. I used to come out here for the blues practice at St. Louis Mills. That's Dan's current project and his passion. And I was thinking how to describe it. Like, you're an idea guy. So when you go to St. Patrick's, it's funny. I mentioned Daryl Strawberry. I mentioned Matt Holliday. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Dan's connected to these people. I met Daryl Strawberry at one of those trivia nights for St. Patrick's Center. And the co-host and I might have gotten out of line that night, had a lot of fun, but Daryl was one of the guests there. I asked him about this about a month ago. He remembers being there that night. You turned that into an event. Then at Cardinal Glennon, Homers for Health became a thing. You became friends with the Holidays. So I'm wondering, are you sitting at breakfast and your wife's like, no, Dan, stop. Like, are they always flying out? Hey, what about that Mills? If I turn it, like, Dan, stop. Has this always been your M.O.?
You know, I've always had to surround myself in every business I've ever been in with smart and people a lot smarter than me who also can say no to me, because I never run out of ideas. It's a blessing and a curse, right? Because if I could have my druthers, I'd have a new event or a new idea launching, once a week. And you got to focus on the big ones and sometimes let the little ideas go. But it is truly, a God-given blessing I've always been given to see opportunities, whether it was Rally Squirrel. When that squirrel ran across that field, it was literally 15 seconds after that squirrel shot across the feet of Schumacher that I said, oh, my God, I'm going to turn that into a fundraiser. And Rally Squirrel, we sold, I don't remember what the number was. I think it was close to $1 million worth of T-shirts with Rally Squirrel, and we adopted him as the mascot at Cardinal Glennon. And to this day, I think he's still the mascot down there. And, it just, in the face of adversity, you got to find opportunities. And this Mills Mall is just an example of it's an incredible structure. It's only 17 years old. It cost $256 million to build. And the only plan moving forward was a bulldozer. And I thought, what a shame to take all of this incredible infrastructure from go-kart tracks to movie theaters to ice rinks to huge storefronts that can convert very quickly and easily to volleyball, basketball, beach volleyball, pickleball, wrestling. I mean, we've got so many things going on already in the spaces, but the master plan to convert the entire campus into a youth sports resort is just it's exciting. It's so you think my creativity is crazy in this space. It goes wild because space is not a problem. There's so much great infrastructure. If you can dream it, you can do it. And that's what we did with Drive-In St. Louis last year. Our sports was shut down by the county, and we had to pivot and try to keep our doors open and keep the project alive while we waited for COVID to work through. We thought, what could we do that could be COVID safe? Well, we got 6,400 parking spots, right? So we just converted it into the largest drive-in concert and movie theater in the country, and ran 9 weeks of events and brought over 60,000 people onto the campus, and every night just had a great party that was safe, and people were able to social distance while enjoying live music and a movie.
You became sort of the voice of youth sports in fighting for youth sports. I'd say Lightning Rod probably at one point. Ever feel like you were – anybody say anything that was unfair, or do you feel you were targeted? People say, shut your mouth, or you only care because you're damn building out there. It's a personal thing because you're going to make money off of this. Was there ever stuff that was said that was mean or unfair that you were aware of?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were, you know, whenever you put yourself out there in any regard, I mean, I'd get criticized for my work at St. Patrick's Center from people. I mean, there's always skeptics. There's always naysayers. There's always going to be people who see another side of the issue. What we just, the only thing we asked for during the entire process and during the COVID, you know, shutdowns was just be fair, right? Let's just be consistent. Let's be fair and make sure that we're science-based. And, you know, when you tell youth kids who, as the more we learned about the virus, we clearly were seeing that A, they were asymptomatic if they did get it, and B, most of them were not spreading. I mean, there was no cases in St. Louis or nationally that were showing that youth sports in any shape or form. There was no evidence, no contact tracing. But to say that kids couldn't go onto a ball field and compete, or the parents weren't allowed to go watch, and while at the same time you're opening up big box stores and allowing 1,000 people into a Walmart, I mean, it's the contradictions is what we fought. We were like, you must be consistent. You can't pick – government's not in the business of picking winners and losers. If we are in a crisis, if we are in a medical crisis, then it needs to be universal to everybody. And it wasn't that we were trying to get other people shut down. We were just trying to get ourselves equally open as the restaurants as well. We were all kind of – for some reason, restaurants and youth sports just got singled out, right? But it was okay that giant big box stores were welcoming thousands of people through their doors every day with no contact tracing ability. I think our big argument was there's probably not another industry in America that can shut down a COVID spread quicker than youth sports. Why is that? It's a thing called a roster, right? If a kid gets sick, I know every kid he was with on that court. I know what court they're on. I know who their referee was. I know who their coaches are. I know who they played against. And we can contact them in a matter of about 15 to 20 minutes. But what we weren't seeing from the county was any level of contact tracing. We were saying, do you have outbreaks within the youth sports industry? If so, we need to know, right? Because we need to be aware of what clubs are having it. Well, they had none. So we started our own research, and we began a coalition and had 2,400 teams and almost 27,000 athletes and their parents, and we were tracking it week to week. And they told us they didn't want our information. They didn't want our data. So they can't say one minute they wanted to be scientifically solid and everything being based on numbers and then deny numbers of the people in the actual industry that they were concerned about. I would have been thinking they would have loved to have real contact tracing coming from the clubs, coming from the organizations, coming from the teams, but they didn't want to meet with us. They didn't want to hear it. They didn't want our, you know, very scientifically gathered information.
You were dealing with some medical personnel as well,
yeah,
doctors.
Absolutely. We had consultants who do real-time testing. We had contact tracing going on within each of the clubs. I mean, the clubs have, as you can imagine, they had high motivation to try to nip it in the bud because a club has thousands of kids in it, right? So they're not going to let the spread happen. They were reporting every single case, notifying their parents when a case was reported. That whole team got quarantined for 2 weeks across the board. What we were seeing is athletes weren't giving it to athletes. We weren't getting any cases of multiple cases within a single team, which tells us it's not a high spread environment. And if you don't agree with that, then give us your evidence that shows that it is. And that's where we just never could get the numbers. And yes, I was an advocate. Yes, I was outspoken. We're still an advocate. We're still only at 50% occupancy along with the restaurants. And, you know, this project is dependent on youth sports. We're not making any excuses that we are a business. And yes, we benefit just as a restaurant benefits, just as a retail store benefits, just as any business would benefit from being 100% open. And yes, that's part of our motivation. But I would say the biggest driver of our motivation is to see what's happening emotionally and mentally to our kids. I mean, this is what they live for. This is, for many of these kids, this is the activity, in some cases, it's their only ticket to college. They come from low-income families. They come from families that can't afford a college scholarship, and they've worked their whole life to get to this point of a junior year or a sophomore year where they're going to be getting recruited. And then when they can't play, that's devastating to these kids. And emotionally, and we're seeing, you know, some recent stories kind of have validated what we've been saying all along, that there is a way bigger risk to our kids right now emotionally and mentally to their well-being than what COVID could ever present. And so, you know, we're advocates for our kids. We're advocates for sports. I don't do what I'm doing. I'm not doing this project because, you know, we want to get rich. I'm doing this project because we have a passion for kids and sports. And we know what sports brings to kids' lives, you know, is it's leadership, it's teamwork, it's respect, it's attitude of gratitude, it's learning how to work hard and seeing results. It has so many more life lessons than just the money aspect of it. And yes, we got to make a business model, we got a pair of debts, we got to be able to do what we got to do. But at the end of the day, we're our entire ownership group, all seven of us, including Bradley Beal, we're in it because we want to touch lives, period. I mean, that's the motivation. It's the single mission focus of our company. We got to make a business model work so we can sustain that mission. But at the end of the day, none of us are in this because we wanted to make millions, or that's not the intent. I mean, we got to make it profitable. There's banks and bondholders counting on us, and a lot of restaurants that'll be in this place, and a lot of hoteliers who want us to fill it up so that we can bring that tourism to St. Louis County. But at the end of the day, this is about kids. This is about families.
It's funny, sitting here listening to you talk, my kids, not terribly into sports. It's funny, the sports guy's kids, they're okay with it. This is on Sunday, my kid's got a flag football game. Doesn't want to go. He's tired. He said, I just don't want to go. He's 10.
Yeah.
And I said, you signed up for the team. I said, you don't have to play next year, but you said you want it. I didn't make you. You said I want to be on that team. So he is just bitching the whole morning, and my wife's like, maybe he doesn't need to go. I said, He's going. Now. And she's just like, feels bad for him because he's tired or whatever, And maybe she didn't even say that, but I was just kind of this mindset that dad was a jerk, and I was that's how I felt, I guess. He goes and catches a touchdown, and he's jumping around, and after the game, well, you got a touchdown. The coaches are high-fiving him. Trust me, he is not the next Steve Largent or anything like that, but he caught a touchdown, and he just felt good. And the rest of the day, we were talking about, my wife and I said, you could see a difference in his whole day. Sure, he's playing video games, needed to be outside more, but it changed his whole persona, and that's my – most of these kids aren't going to be superstars. There's very few LeBrons. We understand. There are very few Bradley Beals. But there is this sort of psyche that it helps their psyche. What do you think? And I don't know if Sam Page ever called you or what high-level people did call you. Because I don't think they like were against kids. I think they thought they were doing the right thing. But what do you think motivated some of those decisions?
Well, we gave up a long time ago trying to figure that out. I mean, I wish I could answer you because – that's been the million-dollar question no one's been able to answer, is why were the kids the focus, right, when clearly the numbers aren't there, right? There's just no rhyme or reason. And to call them super spreaders, will show us that evidence. There just wasn't. So, you know, I quit guessing a long time ago. What we've got to be focused on now is just how we're going to try to rebound, how we're going to, you know, get this project to the finish line. How do we get to 100%, you know, if we even just had a roadmap, like some plan or process, what's the magic number, right? Numbers are plummeting. Death rates or numbers are plummeting. The kids aren't getting the cases. We're not seeing in all the schools that are open, they're not having huge outbreaks. There's no super spreader events going on. What evidence is necessary? What's the threshold necessary to get us to 100%? That's the only answer we'd love to get. Not getting really any feedback at this point. We don't know when our industry is going to be reopened, you know, fully to the point where the banks are going to feel comfortable giving us $25 million to renovate this mall. So, you know, for now, we're bringing back drive-in St. Louis. We're doing what we can. We're running our practices. We're running our small leagues that are currently allowed. But, you know, I'm not going to try to guess what's motivating, you know, why you use sports as such the center point of this COVID response. I would think senior centers and seniors would be a much bigger, and people with comorbidities would be, but not healthy young athletes. It just does not, you know, we can't find the logic, so we're tired of trying to guess what the motives are.
Friends with Bradley Beal, Mike Matheny, Matt Holliday, not Joe Buck and Julie Buck's brother, by the way. This is Dan Buck, and we're coming to you from Powerplex, St. Louis Mills. More on what's on tap for this facility. This is the Kilcoin Conversation.
And all of our Kilcoin conversations are presented by our great sponsors, Triad Bank. That's the St. Louis-based bank, started here in 2005, and really during the past year, helping folks sort of navigate through tough times. They do a lot of work with small businesses around the St. Louis area, and I know for a fact Jim Regna, the CEO, was there late working on a Sunday night. It was March of a year ago, and reaching out to his clients and making sure they were aware of the programs available, just trying to keep them afloat during a tough time, all part of the personal service you get at Triad Bank. It's great to have a neighborhood-friendly bank right here in town. They're located in Frontenac on Clayton Road. It's real close to that Highway 40 and Lindbergh exit. Get on the web and check them out at triadbanking.com. Also, Marie Davila Senior Living, the premier place for your senior years. It's more of a campus than anything else. It's the corner of Clayton and Weidman Road. We've been talking about it for years because our buddy Red Shandietz lived there for many years and was part of the ownership team. You pass by the red water fountains going during the Cardinal playoff runs, the Christmas tree during winter time. Fox 2 featured the big old Christmas tree, believed to be the largest outdoor tree in St. Louis County. So they're festive, fun people. You can take a tour at mariedavila.com. Also, Appliance Discounters, the great place to go for all your appliance needs, and you're going to get big names at the lowest prices. How simple is that? You can get them on the web at theappliancediscounters.com. At Appliance Discounters, they are aware of all the can-nots that the other appliance guys are telling you about when you need an appliance, and you need it right away. At Appliance Discounters, they want to make your life easier, offering a full in-stock 40,000-square-foot warehouse full of GE appliances. Times are difficult enough. Why wait 2 to 3 months for your appliance when you can get it in just a couple of days? Lowest price, GE rebates, great service on in-stock only at Appliance Discounters. Shop any of their showrooms or online, theappliancediscounters.com. And as always, our savings are your savings.
All right, Dan, where are you from? I should know this, right? I should have Googled you before. You're not from St. Louis, are you? You are, okay.
Yes. I was born in St. Louis. My mom remarried when I was about 7 years old, moved to Monmouth, Illinois. Went to Monmouth High School up there, and then came back and went to SIU Edwardsville, and have a lot of family still here in the St. Louis area. All my dad's side and my mom's side of the family is still in the St. Louis region. So this has always been home. The career paths have taken me many places. I did finish my college baseball career at Fort Hays State out in Western Kansas, and from there got my first big, huge broadcasting break in North Platte, Nebraska.
Wow.
Dude, it's not the end of the world, but you can see it from there, you know?
Yeah, I worked in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I was market 214. I think there's only like 216 total markets in the whole country, right? So I was the third smallest market. From there, got my big break in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Got, you know, market 98 or whatever it was, and then from there, went to Central Illinois, spent some time in Decatur, Illinois.
WAND, right?
WAND, that's right. Yeah. Also worked for a couple of radio stations in Springfield and did some sportscasting. Started actually as a sportscaster for 11 years. So in both North Platte and in Sioux Falls and a little bit in WAND. I did weather. I did sports. I was actually the bureau chief, did a lot of political coverage while I was up in Central Illinois in Springfield. And then got my big break from the flood of 93. Did a lot of my editing and a lot of our feeds on the flood. Did some work for CNN during that time and did all my production work for those live feeds out of Channel 4 and got to meet the news director there. I had interned in college with Zipper Zeppa, and Zip helped me get my first big break in my hometown of St. Louis at KMOV in 1994, early 94 after the floods. And it was there only about a year and a half when they started Show Me St. Louis. And that's, you know, spent almost 8 years at Show Me and loved it. I mean, that broadcasting career, absolutely no regrets. Great 21 years, but I was done. I mean, it was one of those things where as you're raising three kids, and I never forget my daughter Tina, good little ball player. She was about 10 at the time. She struck out, I think, 16 or 17 batters, and she walked 19. It was one of those most boring games ever.
It's Nolan Ryan-esque. Yeah. Either walk them or strike them out.
Right? Yeah, so on the drive home, I just said, you know, Tina, what was wrong? You know, you weren't. And she goes, Dad, don't try to critique my pitching when you haven't played catch with me for 3 weeks. And I just, like, kick in the gut, you know, like, you're right, I'm never home. I'm working morning, noon, night, and weekends. And it just, you know, from the mouths of babes, it was kind of an aha moment for me to kind of step back and go, okay, really, what's important here? You know, is 75 hours a week worth it, or do you want to be there? And after that, I coached every team. I was able to, you know, be there on weekends and be there, and I got a normal job. Maybe I say normal at St. Patrick's Center. I still work crazy hours, but I'd go in at 6. I'd always be able to be home by the time the games were starting, and I don't think I missed a recital or a game or anything as they were getting older after I had left broadcasting. So, you know, the rewards were way bigger. Also, Emmys weren't doing it for me anymore. Yeah. And what was doing it for me was seeing people's lives change. You know, working at a place like St. Patrick's Center where I met Leroy, and Leroy was, you know, living under a bridge. And 6 months later, Leroy's got an apartment and a job, and he's clean and sober. That's a different kind of reward, you know. So just being with those kinds of folks, the live hearts, the live minds, the people in social work who, I'm telling you, they're the saints among us, these guys, that what they tolerate, what they put up with, and how they keep showing to work every day with a mission to help people, that's just unbelievable to witness. So, and then after that, you know, just the one constant, people always say, is there any constant in your life, Dan? Is there anything that you've always...
Ideas.
Yeah, well, ideas and sports. Honestly, the one thing I have always done, either as an athlete or as a coach, is that sports has been that one constant. I've loved sharing my love of baseball and softball with literally hundreds of kids who've played on my teams or come to my camps or come to clinics. And that one constant is... What's awesome about the Powerplex is that's where I also get to end my career, really focused on my hobby. You know, very few people get to do their living as their living being their favorite hobby. And that's what I'm doing here, is that every day I get to be around young kids and help coaches. And we're going to do a ton of coaches clinics. And it's one of Matheny's real passions of we've got a cultural problem a little bit right now in youth sports. Way too early single sport focus, way too early win at all cost. We want to kind of back that off here at the Powerplex. We want to give people a little bit of perspective, help coaches, you know, kind of keep that priority in line of focusing on the child, not necessarily on the result. And it's not that winning's not the goal. There's not a game I ever entered I didn't try to win, you know, and the kids want to win. But are you really focused, Mike always says, are you really focused on that child being a winner? Not winning a particular game, but are you teaching that kid how to be respectful, how to be, you know, honor his teammate, how to be a phenomenal teammate to the people around him, how to be a good opponent? That's something, Mike, you know, that very few coaches talk about. What does it mean to be a good opponent? It's do you honor them with as much respect as you honor your own teammates? Because without them, there's no game, right? So honoring them doesn't mean you don't play hard, doesn't mean you don't break up a double play, doesn't mean you do things differently, but at the end of the game, you thank them for the opportunity to have competed, and you respect them, win or lose. Can you do it when you lose as nicely as you do it when you win? Because when the game's over, you ain't getting it back, right? Game's over. Move on and thank that team, thank those coaches for the thrill of competition. And if we can do more of that as a society and really use sports for what I believe the greatest asset is forming young lives, you know, and shaping lives with habits and things they're going to use for years and decades beyond their playing days are over. If that becomes the focus of and something we can really instill here, we've got these things called extreme rules that are going to be a real eye-opener to a lot of folks. Our umpires are going to have a whole different kind of training than current umpires do. And again, I won't dive into all that, but you're going to see a cultural difference at the Powerplex. When you come here, not only are people going to have an amazingly fun, exciting time, but they're going to feel a difference of how people act and how people are treated. Number one, they're going to feel appreciated, which in youth sports right now, it's a $20 billion industry, and I never had a tournament director ever thank me. Right? And no city was ever prepared for these big national tournaments. We will be. Our community is going to welcome people and have hospitality and appreciation for all these sports families like no one's ever seen. And that's what we want to change, is just that cultural perspective. It's a big business. There's a lot of people engaged in it, but we'd argue very few people doing it right. And if any city in America can do it right, it's St. Louis, that I believe is the best sports city in America.
And so I know it's moving forward. You've been working with the county council. There's hiccups. There's COVID. It's never easy. Give me a 60 to 90 second spiel of ultimately what this becomes and what you see it as and maybe what sports are involved and what – just give me that vision now. So somebody listening is going, you know, I don't know. Do we really need this? Give me your best 60, 90-second answer.
Well, it's a 96-acre mall in and of itself. You factor in the outlots, it's about 160 acres. So you got to do something with it, folks, right? It is going to be another Jamestown here in about 4 or 5 years if something's not done. There's a huge tax burden on it that has really been our biggest hiccup of trying to work out a $37 million tax burden settlement with the bondholders. It's not a public tax. It's a privately held bond. So we're working with Bank of America and Oppenheimer and BlackRock and a lot of big investors who own that debt. They've been great to work with. We've gotten down to a settlement price that's workable for everybody. All we need is for U Sports to go to 100% and we will close on the deal, which means all of the baseball and softball fields get built, all the volleyball and basketball venues get built, the beach volleyball venue, the pickleball, the bars will open, the theater will get sold and be reopened by a great theater operator. We've got a go-kart operator. We've already got 74% of the entire mall leased up. So we've got restaurants, we've got retailers, we've got amusement and recreational partners who are teed up and ready to go. The total, this is what blows people away, the total construction time from the day we close to the day we can open is only about 7 months. A little longer on the stadium, it's about an 8 month, 8.5 month. But it's because all of the infrastructure is here. I don't have to create steel. I don't have to
put roofs.
You're
not tearing down the mall.
I'm not. We're just kind of opening it up. We're taking some storefronts out and coming back in with FF&E, with furnishings and fixtures and sports equipment. And these things get open very quickly. So it'll be electric, I will tell you that. I mean, just in our current volleyball venue where we only have 11 courts to hear those whistles and see these kids and see that competition returning, even though we're at 50% capacity, I can't wait to make this mall hum. Every weekend we'll average 10 to 14,000 visitors, and we literally are on pace right now. If we can get this sports reopened by April, we could get this thing done by Christmas of this year. If at the very latest, the dome is another thing. We've got a huge dome that'll be going on the west side of the campus over by the theater. It's 750 feet long, 300 feet wide, 110 feet tall. It'll be the largest indoor place in North America. That only takes about 7 months to construct, and we'll get that done by winter of 22, which gets us probably the campus to about an 85% completion. We still want plans for hotels, water park resorts. We have other partners who are wanting to come in. They want to see phase one completed. But I just think this campus just continues to grow for the next 5 years.
And I know this is your final chapter, but I'm an idea guy too. Would you ever run for office?
No.
Has anybody ever said that?
Yeah, I have a lot of folks who would like to.
I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just wondering if it's... No, I'm sure it's been suggested.
Yeah. You know, I always joke with people. I say, you know, some people have skeletons in their closet. I have cemeteries. So I just don't know who would put themselves through this and put their families through this. I mean, you got to have absolutely, you got to be nuts to run for office in my eyes. And so, no, I have no inkling. I think we all should be more active in our political process. One thing I think COVID has taught us is just how quickly we as citizens can lose control and lose rights and lose things. And I just think if nothing else, it hopefully has motivated a lot of people to be proactive in who your lawmakers are and what kind of laws they're making and what kind of rights they're taking away from you. I think right now people need to be aware of a lot of bigger things besides COVID. There are, major rights that are intrinsically American. And if we lose those rights, what does that leave us with? And I just hope that as everybody, watches how we recover and how we come out of this, not just as a county or as a city, but as a nation, I hope people are active in their own political process, because if we're not, if we're a silenced voice and people are not engaged to the process, I'm scared of what will happen and where this country will go. So I don't think I'll ever run for office, but I will be a spokesman and a champion for kids and for schools and for, people who I feel get violated and no one, because they're not big government, because they're not big tech, because they're not big corporations, they're a voice that sometimes can't be heard. And I think it's incumbent on the electorate and the people in these communities to step forward and be the voice when people are being wronged, whether it's our small businesses, our restaurants, our sports
clubs and organizations, our kids, our schools. I mean, you know, right now it's, you know, those organizations just seem to be being trampled on and nobody seems to care. I shouldn't say that. A lot of people care. They just don't know what steps and what actions and how they can be a part of it. And I think that's where you're going to see a lot of movement in the years ahead, that those voices are going to be heard and they are going to get organized and they're not going to be trampled on anymore. So I'll be a part of that. I'll promise you that I will always be there to champion the little guy.
Dan, fun to catch up, and who knows, maybe a year from now that Kilcoin kid will be spiking a football out
here. Yeah, absolutely. Go deep.
Yeah, right. Showing some terrible sportsmanship. You're like, that's Kilcoin's kid over there. Dan, good to catch up.
Always good. And you know what? I always tell you privately, but your perspective on just so many things, whether it's the TKO or whatever, don't ever lose that either, because people need to sometimes get away from the numbers and the scores and whatever, and the fact that your station gives you that opportunity to kind of bring reality every night to the news and really funny sometimes, but your perspective in sports is so much more needed, and I hope you continue to stay in this business, because we need voices like Martin.
Well, thank you, Dan. And Dan also gets the name right, the Kilcoin Opinion TKO. People will come up and say, hey, I saw you on the Blitz the other night. I saw you in the – what was that thing you do, that final, the Kilcoin commentary, whatever? All right, Dan, thanks so much.
You bet, man.
Hey, great to catch up with Dan Buck, who has done a number of different things. Boy, around town, you've seen him on television when he was anchor reporter, but then you'd see him on TV talking about St. Patrick's or Cardinal Glennon, and now doing this project, Powerplex, out at the Old Mills location. Fun to kind of hear about his career and where things stand. I know Dan was really passionate about kids and sports during the pandemic. Fun to catch up with him. The Kilcoin Conversation, as always, presented by Marie Davila Senior Living, Triad Bank, and Appliance Discounters. Get on the web, theappliancediscounters.com. I'm Martin Kilcoin. Thanks for tuning in.